This is Don Felder, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks with John Caddick.
Hi, everybody. This is Ann Wilson, and this is Iron City Rocks.
Hi, this is John Waite, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Welcome to episode 567 of the Iron City Rocks podcast. I'm your host, John, coming from the Iron City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, bringing you the best rock, hard rock, heavy metal, and blues talk on the net. Episode 567, we're very pleased and honored to be joined by kind of a quasi-hometown guy. His mother was from Charleroi, Pennsylvania, a man who reached amazing levels of stardom, Mr. Sean Cassidy. He was gracious enough to join us back in 2023 when he was doing his first show back in Pittsburgh, sort of a scaled-down show. And as we talk about in the interview, I enjoyed it so much. He's doing a full-fledged tour now. The tour is entitled The Road to Us. So he will be coming in to do a show at the Library Music Hall of Homestead, the Carnegie Library Music Hall of Homestead, that is, on December 6th. It's a Saturday night. Doing a ton of hits, and as you remember, Sean rose to just huge levels of success in the mid to late 70s. He was everywhere on the radio. Albums Born Too Late, or Born Too Late and Under Wraps, his self-titled album, his co-starring on the Hardy Boys. He was on the cover of every Dynamite, Teen Beat, Tiger Beat magazine you could imagine. But really had some great stuff, hooky pop rock songs, and did them brilliantly. And then for many of us, you know, it was kind of pre-internet era, obviously, just kind of went away. He made a really interesting album called Wasp, which we talk about in the interview, collaborating with Todd Rundgren. And that album is very much what you'd expect from an album with Todd Rundgren. So we talk about that in some detail, and it was fun kind of looking back on that particular record because you don't hear a lot about it. And then he kind of went away. It did some acting and then kind of returned to great prominence as a show producer and writer. The show New Amsterdam, the medical drama, had a very, very successful run on television just a few years ago. And then he went back out on the road kind of after 30 years, and it was great to see him. Actually, it was closer to 40 years, as I think about it. He did a show here in 2023, I believe it was, and as he said, he just enjoyed getting back out there and reconnecting with the fans, so he's doing a proper tour and coming around to see us on December 6th, so we're going to dive into that interview and get a chance to catch up with Sean Cassidy.
Well, I was 16 at secret school. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I bought a guitar. I got the fever. That's rock and roll. I played at parties, played in bars. I spent my money buying new guitars. I scream my heart out, but I would love it. That's rock and roll.
Ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome back to Iron City Rocks. We have on the line Mr. Sean Cassidy. How are you doing today, Sean?
I'm great, John. Thanks for having me.
It is an absolute pleasure to have you coming back in. As we talked off air, this time you're coming in not on the same night as Miss Taylor Swift. So, no,
yeah, I'm
no,
sure I really hurt her ticket sales.
There were no empty seats. I'm sorry. And I, you know, might lose some credibility with the audience, but I was actually at the Taylor Swift show that night. So I did not get a chance to see you, unfortunately, the last time through, but no excuses in 2025. You've got the Road to Us tour coming in on December 6th, Saturday night, so a good night of the week. You're on a little bit of a break right now. If I see correctly, your booking agent gave you a break while you were in Ohio and then is sending you back to Ohio as soon as your break is over. How are the shows going so far? Can you just talk a little bit about how this show is a little bit different than the last time you came through?
Yeah. Well, first of all, this is the biggest tour I've ever done in my life. This is like 6 months. We're going out like 2 weeks a month and hitting virtually every part of the country, and we're going to Canada. Mm-hmm. I was never able to do a tour like this when I was a kid because I was doing the Hardy Boys,
yeah,
and I was recording at night. And so I'd go out on weekends here or there, and I'd go out maybe for 2 weeks in a summer. But and the previous tour, when I was in Pennsylvania, was kind of a, you know, toe in the water experiment to see if I really enjoyed doing it, if people cared about seeing me. Mm-hmm. You know, you take 40 years off, you don't know if anybody's going to show up. And fortunately, they did, and they really seemed to enjoy it, and I really enjoyed it. So I called my agent and I said, okay, let's do this for real. Let's do it like people really do it. And, you know, book it a year in advance and make it manageable for me. I still have kids at home, so I didn't want to be gone the entire time.
Yeah.
And, you know, storytelling is a big part of the show. And it's a very important part of the show for me because it is more applicable to my life now. I've been a television writer and producer for 30 years. One of the reasons I stopped performing is because I found a great creative lane in a different area that gave me more of a normal life and allowed me to stay home more, which I needed and wanted.
Yeah.
And, but I honestly discovered that I miss the connection with people. But being able to go out and not only sing songs that people might know, sing hits from back in the day and sing some new songs as well, but to be able to weave these songs together with story made the whole thing feel authentic to who I am now. And it seems to really be resonating with the audience too, which is great.
Yeah. And I think obviously your work from television, you are a storyteller. I mean, that's what you did. So it makes it, I think, very relatable. And I think people enjoy that. I think you go back to, you know, showing my age, but like the MTV Unplugged, when artists had a chance to kind of sit and talk about the stuff, storytellers, you know, even Bruce Springsteen's Broadway, really give you a window into who the person is. And it makes it fun. I mean, everybody knows the hits, but it's kind of fun to get the stories.
For sure. And there are stories associated with the hits that present them in maybe an unexpected light. You know, songs that you thought maybe were about this turn out they were about this, and they ended up in my world and the audience's world for reasons that the audience may not know. And I talk a lot about my family, and the show's very funny too. I mean,
yeah,
and it has a sort of an emotional arc to it. People get teared up at times, so it's kind of secretly more like a Broadway show in that sense that it has a narrative. But I don't know. I'm loving it. I'm having a great time. The audiences have been sensational. We're getting a much broader audience than we did when I first started doing this like 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more men, which is great. And a lot of people in their 20s, which is astonishing to me. But apparently the Hardy Boys is on. It's like on Peacock or it's certainly on YouTube, I guess.
Yeah.
A lot of, like, people who have been watching the Hardy Boys show up and they see this guy who looks like Joe Hardy's father. But they seem to really like it too, which is awesome.
Yeah, and I'll admit I was the same way. I think it had been on Netflix, and I watched a couple, and then it went off, I think, Netflix, and I ended up just going out on YouTube and buying all the DVDs to again show my age. Dinosaur watching them on DVD, but love that show. It was a really important part of childhood for a certain generation, you know. And we were, you know, some of us were too young. Like my sister was old enough to be really into your music. I was really into the show, you know. It was like,
Right.
you know,
But a
you
lot
were.
of guys who come, the same thing.
Yeah.
They love the Hardy Boys. And but these younger people have seen the show now. And I have two new songs out now. I wrote and recorded two new songs for the show that you can download on iTunes and Apple Music and all the usual suspects. And they play an important part in the show, too. I wrote them to support story that didn't have song. So I wrote new songs, and I found out I missed doing that. I hadn't been writing songs since they stopped making records. I'd written hundreds of scripts, TV and movie, but I missed songwriting. So I
yeah.
need to do that again, too.
Is it similar at all? I don't know much about script writing, not nearly as much about songwriting as you do. But I mean, you know, when you look at like Teen Dream, you know, versus New Amsterdam, was there any parallels to the creative process?
Probably not. I mean, only in that I, you know, go into a room by myself and sort of dig into what I'm feeling, and something will come out that reveals what I'm feeling. It's a way of kind of bypassing your brain in a way. More so with songwriting than script writing. Script writing is architecture.
Right.
Really, it's like structure is really important, especially in television, act breaks and all that stuff, you know. But once you have kind of the foundation, I equate it to like building a house. You know, the script is the architectural plan, and then the producing is the contractor, the guy you hire to execute, you know, all the different subcontractors, the plumbing and the electrical and the roof. And that's what producing a television show is like. You basically have an image of something that doesn't exist yet, and you're bringing all these people on to make that image real. And screenwriting, I'm in the middle of writing a pilot right now while I'm touring. So I'm in the hotel working that brain, and then at night I'm doing a performance thing. Again, which is something I'd missed. I hadn't done that in a long time, except being in a room selling a television show to network executives, you know.
Is it, do you like the kind of instant gratification of a live audience? I mean, obviously you do a show and you can see, you know, it's doing XYZ on the Nielsen ratings or, you know, whatever they use to measure TVs on streaming anymore. But, you know, that's not an instant gratification. You know, I've talked to like Kiefer Sutherland, who went out and did a tour singing, and, you know, we talked about how much he loved being able to just get that feedback right away. Do you like that aspect, or do you miss that when you're not
I
performing?
Absolutely missed it. I didn't realize how much I missed it until I did it. And part of my reason for doing this now is I feel like if anybody's in a position to be a conduit to get people out of the house, get them off the computer or their phone, and get them into a room together, all the crazy divisiveness in the country, having a shared experience where all of that stuff becomes secondary, the shared humanity becomes the thing. Where people laugh and cry and have a great time with music, whatever. If you can help make that happen, you must. And I'm feeling that too. And I go out, you know, I do like these VIP Q&A sessions before some of the shows. I'll just talk to the people for an hour and they'll ask me anything under the sun and I'll answer them. But sometimes the conversations get, you know, really in depth, and I hear things that are really insightful, and people are starved for it. And I'm starved for it. I've been, you know, I feel like Rip Van Winkle. I went into my room at 29 and started writing. It kind of came out at 59. It was like, oh, I missed some stuff.
Yeah. Is it touring now? I mean, it's got to be so much different than obviously what it was like for you in the late 70s. I can't imagine what that must have been like. And almost as much adoration as you had from the media, how isolating that must have been. Because I can't, any more than like Kiss, you couldn't go anywhere. Am I wrong?
Isolation is bad. It's just not healthy.
Yeah.
And I some part of me knew that because, you know, my last concert was at the Astrodome, 1980, 55,000 people, said goodnight, and never did another show till 2020.
Yeah.
It wasn't like I tried to come back or anything. I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't know that would be my last show, but some part of me needed to take the time to process what had happened to me. My father died when I was doing the pilot for the Hardy Boys. So suddenly I'm doing this television show, I'm making these records, I'm opening the Grammys, I'm doing all the big time stuff, and you don't have a moment to reflect on it. And I got married really crazy young, partly thanks because I just was trying to find ground. And I stayed home for the 80s. I joke about it in my show, but I really did. I just read books and I processed. And I thought, like a lot of young guys in their 20s, I thought about, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? Do I want to stay on this path? Do I want to try and transition? Do I want to, Frank Sinatra my way into like being a serious performer, having been a teen idol? Sinatra was like the original one. Or do I want to do something else that is equally or maybe even more creative? And I found that writing offered me the life I needed. It allowed me to stay out of the spotlight, still be creative, work with great people, and have maybe more control over my destiny, But then I found I missed people, and being able to meld those two parts of my life, the performing side and the writing side, in a show like this now is literally the greatest experience I think I've ever had.
Yeah, it's got to be a lot easier now that you've got to be able to do this on your own terms. Your pilot takes off, for example, you can kind of control where you're going now, where I have to imagine back in the 70s, you were just the face of a machine. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, I think you get to that level of stardom where you're playing, football arenas. You're probably no one's probably asking you if that day is good for you or do you need to be home for, a kid's
No,
graduation
and
or
you're not really, you're part of the experience, but I feel a much stronger connection with the audience now. So most of them were kids, and it was, a scream-a-thon. It was like a hormone fest. And they didn't really know me, and I talk about this a lot too. I talk about it in the show. When you are at the center of a hurricane like that, it's not about you. It's about them. And it's about their shared experience of, we're going to the thing and we've got the poster and we're doing the slumber party and we're, I mean, it's that time of life that they're sharing with each other. And you just happen to be the poster on the wall, but they don't know who that person is. And I feel like they do know me now, the people that come to the show, and I know them too, which is also great because there is a profound connection in that experience that I didn't really consider then.
And you take the hysteria out of it, and I'm sure that helps too. It's people can talk to you without fainting, which
Most of the
I'm
time,
sure that
yeah.
was awesome. Yeah, well, I'm sure you've got some great stories of modern day fans who have
There is
probably.
an interesting arc. Yeah, but yes. And as I say, I'm seeing a lot of people who didn't have that experience with me, that I'm a new person to, because they're younger and more men, as I said. The show's funny. And I know a lot of guys who get dragged along with their wives or whatever, or sort of reluctant maybe because, they didn't have my poster when they were 15 and probably wanted to beat me up in high school. But they come like, oh, that guy was funny. That was funny. And the band is great. It's a really good band.
It's fun. And I notice you're playing bass on this. Was that easier for you to sing when playing bass, or is that just
No, it's probably
you?
harder actually for me to sing playing bass, but I could, this is sounds ridiculous, but I couldn't find a bass player in my zip code. And this was really out of convenience. I had 6 months. I play the guitar, I play the piano. My songs are not, it's not like I'm doing Miles Davis catalog or, so my songs are fairly straightforward in terms of what the bass lines are. So I learned to do it and I found out I loved it because I tend to play rhythm guitar very much like I'm playing the drums. I break a lot of guitar strings. I play hard. So playing the bass saves me from doing that
Save it.
in lockstep with the drummer. And I have a great guitar player who happens to be my nephew and an extraordinary keyboard player, Lon Hoyt, who has led a bunch of Broadway shows as a musical director. So he's played rock and roll, classical to show tunes. He can do it all. And the band is really strong I'm the weak link musically.
If without you, where would they be? Well, they'd be doing something else. But well, that's also as far as is the catalog. I mean, is primarily the first three albums or any gems
There's
from
something from all of them.
Wasp make it in it?
Yeah, I've been playing a song called "So Sad About Us," which is an old Who
Who
song
song? Yeah.
that I recorded with Todd Rundgren and Utopia. We've been playing that. We do a song called "Break for the Street" that is on Room Service. I think it opens Room Service.
Okay.
Yeah, songs from the first three for sure. And songs like I did a show on Broadway for a year and a half with my brother David called Blood Brothers.
Okay.
He sang the final song from that show, and a lot of the audience had seen the show. It ran for a year and a half, so that has emotional resonance with people, I think.
Yeah, certainly it would. The Wasp album, I actually was listening to that recently. Can you just touch on a little bit of what, I mean, it's been, what is it, 45 years, hard to imagine, since that album came out. But that was, from the opening, Rebel Rebel, it's certainly a different album. But obviously you kind of expect that when you see Todd's name on the sticker on the album. But how was that experience for you? Kind of, was that a conscious decision to try to change up the sound?
Yes, I didn't know we'd be changing it up quite as dramatically as we did. And that was Todd just saying, look, I was a big fan of Todd's. Room Service ended up being my least favorite record because there's so you what I feel on it, and I felt then making it was this pressure from the record company to layer in disco. Disco was just everything. It was hard to even break through in radio unless you had some disco record. And that just felt completely inauthentic to me. I wasn't a disco artist, and there were some disco records I liked, but it wasn't like the main thing for me.
Right.
I liked power pop. I always did. And so Todd, who had produced a very eclectic group of artists beyond his own records, from the Tubes to Grand Funk to the New York Dolls, I was like, he might be interested, and he was. And he said to me, he said, look, you're an actor, right? Yeah. He said, let's act. Let's create characters. Let's shoot the moon. Do bold stuff. Some of it may be great. Some of it may suck. And that's how I feel about that record. I think some of it is great. Some of it does kind of suck. But I like the fact that 21-year-old me was bold enough to
Yeah.
take that shot. And it was a declaration of independence,
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I'm honestly, for those who, may think, oh, listen to Born Too Late or, and stick with the first couple, don't sleep on Wasp. I think it's neat because it is, I don't want to say it's experimental in some places, but it's certainly
It is, and
different.
there's some great songs on it. Pretending
Yeah.
is a great song. Todd wrote, we wrote a song together called Cool Fire, ironically about television, about Mark McLuhan's take on television and media. The song Wasp itself is insane. We covered Once Bitten, Twice Shy long before Great White had a hit with it because I was an Ian Hunter fan. And aside from the fact that I'm singing in like a crazy falsetto on Rebel Rebel, the track is pretty cool.
Yeah, that one, yeah, when I first started listening, like, is that him? Is that somebody else? But it is, it's cool to, to take that risk. I enjoy that when artists do it, even if it's, you're not always hitting it out of the park. It would have been,
It's sort of, someone's taste,
yeah,
like
yeah.
it's my life, I think is really powerful. That's the old Animal song. And as they say, It's So Sad About Us, it is like a power pop song, and it always was.
Yeah,
Got a
it's.
little bit more oomph than, some of my earlier records.
Absolutely. Well, Sean, I want to thank you so much again. You are coming in to do the show on December 6th, Saturday night. Tickets available. It's an 8 o'clock show. It's a straight evening with you, right?
No, just me.
Just you.
Come on down, you'll have fun.
Awesome. All right. A giant thank you to Mr. Sean Cassidy for taking the time out of his schedule. As he mentioned, he's in the midst of trying to write a show pilot, put a tour together, and raise children and all kinds of things going on in his life. So it was very gracious of him to spend some time with us again. I want to remind you again, the show December 6th, the Homestead Carnegie Library, The tickets will be available. We'll have a link in our show notes. So if you head over to ironcityrocks.com and go to episode 567, we'll have a link. Or you can go to Sean Cassidy's website. He's got a link. Or if you happen not to be in the Pittsburgh market, he's playing in many, many cities on this tour. Very extensive tour. So it'll be great for people to get a chance to see him. Again, for those of you who don't recall the first interview, his mother was from the Mon Valley of Pittsburgh. His family, very synonymous with Stoney's Brewery. So there's a little bit of the Yaquigany River in Sean's blood. So kind of consider him a hometown hero, even if he was from California. But his DNA is certainly Western PA. So want to welcome him home, so to speak. And until next time, I want to thank you for listening. You can drop us an email, ironcityrocks@gmail.com. All our social medias are Iron City Rocks. Drop us a line. Let us know what kind of stuff you're into, things you would like to hear on the show in the future. We would love to hear from you. Suggest some bands, you know, bands that we haven't heard about. The beauty and the curse of the internet is there's so much out there, it's hard to digest it all. So would love any and all feedback. And until next time, thank you so much for listening.